Okay, now we have come to the next item of this mindfulness for young adult session. Actually, here we are taking a sutta and progressing towards the various aspects of it. And these days we are discussing Kaggavisana Sutta, which is available in the Kuddaka Nikaya Sutta Nipata. And Sutta Nipata is one of the interesting book available in Kuddaka Nikaya, where you probably know that most of the common and frequently known suttas like Mangala Sutta, Karaniya Metta Sutta, Ratana Sutta, Parabhava Sutta, and all these are actually coming and available in the Sutta Nipata. So this Kaggavisana Sutta is also from this Sutta Nipata, and it is basically talking about the secluded practice. The emphasis is on the secluded practice. So, and again, the commentator mentioned that this Sutta Nipata, this particular Kaggavisana Sutta, it is having around 40 verses, and each and every verse is representing a kind of a udana or kind of explanation by Paccheka Buddha. Paccheka Buddha is a person who is self-enlightened but does not establish a sasana, an order of sangha, but he too is self-enlightened. Now, one of the interesting characteristics of the Paccheka Buddha is that they are secluded living. So they don't much associate the people, rather they live in the forest and they don't much preach Dhamma. Now, in this particular verse, Buddha talks about especially the various sensual pleasures. Kamahi chitra madura manorama virupa rupena matenti chittam adinavang kama gunesu diswa eko chare kaggavisana kappu. So this is the verse that we are going to discuss today, and it is actually talking about various sensual pleasures, and there is an interesting story behind this. And that is mentioned in the commentary to this Kaggavisana Sutta. And according to the commentary, one time there is a rich family, and to that there is one child. And he actually had a desire to become a monk. Now, mother and father didn't like that idea, so they were keep on avoiding that idea. So this child is now growing up. Still, he has a desire to become a monk, but the mother and father don't allow and they don't like. And because of that, this child is also not happy because he'll want to become a monk. And on the other hand, parents are not happy because this child wants to become a monk. So there's a kind of a situation here. So ultimately, parents were thinking, now this child is continuously asking permission to become a monk, and he is not happy while being at home. So if we are not allowing him, he is continuously unhappy. So how about we allowing him to become a monk, even though we are unhappy about it? So they had a kind of a discussion between those two, mother and father, and ultimately they have given the permission. So what he did, this child, this youth, what he did was, he went to the group of Paccheka Buddhas, and he went there and he wanted to become a monk. Now, you know, the facilities available for those Paccheka Buddhas were quite frugal, not that luxurious, only the very basic requisites were with them. So there is no any sort of comfortable place to stay. There is no such established temple. But they are living in a very basic huts, kutis. And that is how they were living. So this young person also went there. And so they actually, those Paccheka Buddhas, actually they have prepared a small place and asked him to stay. So when a person coming from lay life who is quite rich and enjoying their life and sort of having enough luxuries. And when they become a monk, so this sort of a situation, that is to sit on a sort of a very minor kind of furniture, using very basic furniture, and again maybe sleeping on a mat or on the ground, and there are mosquitoes and snakes and all these other external problems, and again there is no enough food. Issues are there, and again living in the forest. So this young person also has to face all these issues. Now they are going on village Pindapatha, arms round, and this child also now going, and now he has become a monk, and he is the last person. You know, in the monkhood, the most senior monks go in the front and the most junior monk go as the last. So that is how they are going on arms round. So sometimes what happens is people have given food to the most senior monks, and there is nothing much available for the juniors. And when they are coming back to the place where they are dwelling, and ultimately what is available, what is left out, is only available for this young monk. So he become somewhat unhappy about it, and in a way he don't have much food to eat, less nutrition, and he become lean and lean and ultimately weak. And he was thinking, I can't bear this anymore, because these situations are quite unfavorable. I can't maintain my health. I am becoming lean, weak. So therefore, I better go back home. So he has given up robes. He disrobed and he went back home. Now, after some time, he regained health. And after some time, again, he was thinking, I want to become a monk. Now again, he is asking from his parents, and ultimately again and again when he is asking, again parents allowed him to go. Now this person again coming back to the Paccheka Buddhas, and again he became a monk. But the same situation. He has to go on village Pindapatha, arms round, and has to be the last person, not getting enough food, and have to sleep on a mat. And it is sometimes quite cold, sometimes it is warm, the mosquitoes are there, and all the duties have to be accomplished, and many issues are there. So he again not happy. Again he is becoming weak, his body is becoming weak, lean, and many issues are there. Again he disrobed. Now again he go back home and again strengthen himself. And after some more time, again he want to become a monk. So for the third time also he comes, and at the third time also he is going back. Now for the fourth time he is coming back, again he has become a monk. Now at that time he was fairly matured, and he was bearing the situation, he is quite patient about the situation, and he was able to practice diligently. And he too became a Paccheka Buddha. And after he became a Paccheka Buddha, and he has mentioned this verse. So that is how the commentary mentioned, Kamahi Chitra Madhura Manorama Virupa Rupena Matempi Chittam. So the nature of the various sensual pleasures are explained here. So they are quite different. They are quite, say, attractive. And they appear like quite sweet, delightful. As a result of that, whoever thinks about them going to have an agitated mind. Suppose that a young person is looking at a young girl. So assume that this young girl is quite pretty. And so this young person, young man's mind get agitated. So his mind is not peaceful anymore. He's again and again thinking about that girl. And he is becoming frustrated, and he is thinking while at home, while at traveling, etc. So he is now sometimes he called as love sick. Now he's not in a typical situation, but rather he's a little frustrated now. Now his mind is agitated. Now similarly, I mean, assume that you are angry with someone. You had an argument with someone. Again, the same situation. Or you want to have something and you don't have enough money. Again, your mind becomes agitated. And you want to have something, but it belongs to someone else, so you can't have it. Again, you become upset. Again, your mind becomes agitated. So these sensual pressures have that nature. Whoever desiring going to suffer. We think the opposite. We think that having satisfied this desire is the solution. Having possessing or obtaining this sensual pleasure is the solution. So this is how we think. As a result of that, whatever we like, we are trying to own it. We are trying to have it. We are trying to buy it. So this is how we think. But anyway, in this verse, it is mentioned. So these sensual pleasures, they appear like sweet, delightful. And because of this diversity, so mind become agitated. And on the other hand, so there is another verse, very beautiful verse available in Nibbedika Sutta, that is also I have mentioned here. Nate kamayani chitrani bhoki sankapparago purisasa kama. It's giving another perspective to this sensual pressures. So that particular verse mentioned, it is not really the problem with the external sensual objects. There may be various beautiful sights. There may be various beautiful songs, melodies, and again, some attractive incense, scents, etc. And again, maybe delicious food, tastes. Again, very good tactile sensations, tangibles. So this was mentioned, the problem is not there by them. The problem is with the mind. So whenever one start to think about these sensual objects, so that mind get attracted, that mind become agitated, and that mind become hooked up with these objects. So this mind become now quite vulnerable because it has lost its independence. It has lost its neutral home in a way. Now it is keep on thinking, mental proliferation, conceptual proliferation, and the dreaming, etc. is going on because it is generating some sort of a happiness as well. So kind of a delight is there when one is thinking about these sensual pressures. At the moment he doesn't have it, but he is imagining, he is thinking, he is projecting. And as a result of that, he is getting some sort of satisfaction. If we take the same example, if a young boy looking at a young girl, assume that he now has gone home, she is not here, but he is thinking about her. By thinking like about her, he is getting some sort of satisfaction. So this doesn't only happen to boys, it may happen to girls as well. So anyway, so thinking about that sensual object keeps that mind, keeps that person's mind occupied, agitated, and as a result of that, he can't sometimes sleep, he can't eat, everywhere he goes, remembers this particular person, whatever this particular object. So likewise, now his mind is no more enjoying any freedom. So the problem is not really lying with the object, rather it is a issue available in the mind. So this is a very, in a way, somewhat philosophical idea. And on the other hand, it's a very practical point that Buddha is pointing out. Because you can't simply control the outside world, rather you have to tame your own mind. I have to tame my own mind. So I can't avoid, or I can't stop others coming close to you. Various sights, sounds, smells, tastes, tactile sensations, you can't stop them. But the problem lies in our mind. So that is what mentioned here. Sankappa rago purisassa kamo. So this mental proliferation, conceptualization, thinking, looking at from different angles and thinking, imagining. So that is what making the mind agitated. This is what you get a kind of a imagined satisfaction. Not real satisfaction, but kind of an imagined satisfaction. So this imagined satisfaction is far away from the real satisfaction. So probably you may get something what you like, but only for a couple of days, then you lose that satisfaction. You don't have that satisfaction. So you were thinking about it for a long time, many days, many months, but once you have it, only a few days you have some satisfaction and ultimately you lose it. So the governing factor or the driving factor is that sort of imagined satisfaction. So that is the one causing the real problem. So how to avoid that? So that is where Buddha is mentioned that one has to eradicate that desire, chandaraga, that desiring part, that craving part has to be controlled. Sankapparago purisasa kamo tittanti chitrani tateva loke atitta dhira vinayanti chanda. So the person, the wise person, actually tame his mind. He tame his desires. He eradicates the craving while keeping those external sensual objects as it is. So it is not that you are trying to control those external objects. You are not trying to sort of avoid or rather control all these sights, sounds, smell, taste, etc. Rather, you are trying to find out or recognize the problem within yourself, within your mind. So, by the way, these external objects are in a way the triggers. So they are arousing desires. They have some connection. But these desires have to be addressed. Those desires have to be addressed not by satisfying desires, but by recognizing desires. Recognizing and letting go of the desires. And when it comes to the second noble truth, Buddha mentioned three types of tanha, craving. Kama tanha, bhava tanha, vibhava tanha. Kama tanha is the one particularly mentioned in this verse, where there are five types of sensual objects: form, sounds, smells, tastes, and tangible objects. And to them we have some sort of a desire, that is the sensual desire, that is kama tanha. And that craving has to be recognized. So it happens within your mind, within our mind. So whenever such craving arises in the mind, that we have to recognize. Typically what happens is, when craving arises in the mind, it generates some sort of a happiness in the mind. So that is the problem. So it has some sort of satisfaction in the mind. As a result of that, we like to think. We like to even imagine things and think. As I mentioned, if someone sees something beautiful, even when that is not available, we can imagine about it and think about it. As a result of that, that person is getting some derived satisfaction. So that is sometimes kind of an addiction. So it is again and again thinking, again and again you become sort of thrilled, and again you are thinking. It's kind of a vicious cycle. Now you can't stop thinking about him, thinking about her. So now you become some sort of a slave to that sort of thinking. So that is further explained in Madhupindika Sutta, in Majjhima Nikaya, how this complete proliferation is generated. Actually, at the beginning, it happens with the very cause and effect manner, in a causal manner. So when your eye connects, or rather come in line with an object, with a form. So it conditions to generate eye consciousness, kind of a cognition happen. So once eye consciousness, form and eye available for long time in the sense again and again they occur, so it appear like these three are available for together. And that generates the contact. Contact causes feeling. Now, if this feeling is sort of pleasurable feeling, pleasant feeling, so now your mind get interested about that feeling. As a result of that, now it is inquiring about it. It is more and more trying to recognize who is he, who is she. So now this recognition, this causes various kinds of perceptions in the mind. Now you are adding several thoughts to this incident. And as a result of that, now thinking started. You are thinking in line with the present moment. You are thinking connected to the past. You are thinking about the future. So likewise, you are adding more and more things. And as a result of that, thinking is going on and on. Ultimately, you can't stop thinking. And you become kind of a slave to this very thinking, to this very conceptual proliferation. So this is how we are in a way strengthening our desires. So whenever we see something and it generates some sort of feeling, and if it is pleasurable, we start to recognize it. We are putting more attention to it and we are trying to recognize it. And now we start to think. Thinking from this line, thinking from another side, thinking from another side. We are adding many different ways of thinking. And ultimately, mind become really confused. And mind entangled in this whole situation. And you become kind of a slave, a victim of this vicious thinking. So this is how we are strengthening all our desires. But on the other hand, if we are able to avoid this kind of mental proliferation, if we are able to calm down mental proliferation, then we are not strengthening these inner habits. Now, if we are able to cut through this mental proliferation, if we understand the danger in this mental proliferation, so that should be something that we have to appreciate, that we have to encourage as much as possible. So when mind start to think, you have to apply catch and break. So otherwise what happened, you become your thinking machine, your thinking vehicle will sort of run on top of you. So once you recognize, once the mindfulness show you that now this fellow is start to thinking and it is going in wrong track, now you have to apply brakes. You have to disengage from thinking and you have to look at it objectively. In order to do that, you have to have enough mindfulness. If your mindfulness is very weak, then you can't stop. Then you become kind of a victim. But if you are able to develop a fair amount of mindfulness, and if you are able to recognize these various thoughts clearly, then you are in a better position to stop this mental proliferation. And as a result of that, now mental proliferation becomes less and less. And mind start to recognize the value of inner silence. And it may recognize the value of sort of calmness, peacefulness, maintaining kind of a equilibrium in the mind rather than becoming agitated. So that is actually happening through the practice. It may not happen immediately, but with continuous practice, one may be able to recognize such kind of a stability in the mind. Now, in this particular verse, therefore it is mentioned, Atitta dhira vinayanti chanda. So therefore, by seeing the danger in this proliferation and in this mental construction, so one is trying to tame that mind, tame that desire, the craving which is generating this sort of vicious type of thinking. And again, in the previous verse, it's mentioned, Adinavan Kama Gunesu Diswa. So on the other hand, one can do some sort of a sense restraint as well. Not only your own kind of Chittanupassana, or you are looking at your own mind, but at the same time, you do some sort of a sense restrainment as well. You are not going to the place where you're getting agitated. You are not listening to certain music or whatever things which is prone to a lot of agitation. And you are not using too much unnecessary perfumes, etc. if your mind getting agitated. And you are not consuming various foods if your mind is getting agitated because of those. And you are not going through certain sensations if those are causing a lot of agitation to the mind. So likewise, you maintain some sort of a restraint as well, because both sides has to be addressed. So one approach is the sense restrainment. Even though your eyes are healthy and you can see as much as possible, you are not going to sort of pollute your mind through seeing. So you are maintaining some sort of a sense restrainment. So that is also one aspect, indriya samvara. And on the other hand, due to some reason, if mind starts to think, proliferate, start to desire, so there you have to apply brakes and to calm down the mind, maintain the peacefulness, and to maintain the calmness. So that is in a way the practice. And here in this verse, it is mainly the sense restrainment is highlighted. There in the first one, it is the sense restrainment highlighted. Evang kama, adinavang kama gunesu diswa. So recognizing the danger in these various sensual objects, so you maintain kind of a seclusion. But in the other verse, some advanced approach is taken where you are not only restraining your senses, but at the same time you are practicing vipassana, where you are recognizing various desires in the mind, and you are not trying to become a victim to those desires, not simply become a slave to those desires. Rather, you try to recognize these desires and then let them go, rather than holding them, rather than implementing them. You recognize desires and then let them go. So that is what mentioned in the Samudaya Satcha, the second noble truth. So one has to recognize desire. So whenever sensual desires are arising, one has to recognize that sensual desire. So recognition alone is not enough. So once you understood it, recognize it, now you have to let it go. Rather than you are trying to implement it, rather than you are trying to satisfy that desire, rather you step back and watch it. You are mindful about that desire. And desire is desire. Now desire is not your desire. Lust is not your lust. Anger is not your anger. Jealousy is not your jealousy. So all these defilements, you are now watching objectively. Now, as a result of this disengaged observation or distant observation, unparticipated observation, so now we are in a better position to let go of those desires. Now these desires are losing their power because we are not strengthening them through mental proliferation. Now you are able to disengage from these thoughts, sensual thoughts. As a result of that, those desires start to fade away, and ultimately, again mind become relaxed. Again mind become unagitated, calm, peaceful. So this is something I like to share with you today. And with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. And now we can get into the question and answers.
Avasarai Bhante, currently there are six questions. Question number one, general question. Dear Bhante, while practicing, and especially on day-to-day activities, inside my mind I see a rising of craving. It is occasional, situational, and not for everything. I see it as craving enough to reduce its force. According to the teaching, Bhante, my understanding is that craving is called dhamma, Could you please explain advice on how to remove this? Much merits and appreciation with metta. Did that make sense, Bhante? The question?
Yeah, I think you're asking how to remove craving.
I think that's what it says.
Yeah, yeah, I think answer already given. Because today's Dhamma 7 actually talks about it. So sensual desires are there, various desires are there, and how to overcome them. So that is what mentioned in the Dhamma. So according to Dhamma, so it is not that you are trying to satisfy desires. So now this is the typical approach. I mean, whenever there is a desire, so we want to implement that desire. We want to satisfy that desire. So that is why we are driven by this pleasure principle. So as much as possible, we are trying to satisfy the senses, sensual gratification, and we are driven by this pleasure principle. But here we are trying to do in a way differently. When sense desires are available, so you have to step back and watch it rather than satisfying it, rather than gratifying that desire. So that actually is not an easy task. So don't think that it is easy like we say. So it requires a fair amount of practice, because if you don't have enough mindfulness, what happens is when you are trying to look at this desire, ultimately the weak mindfulness causes to strengthen this desire, strengthen this defilement. Ultimately, you become a victim of this defilement in a way. But on the other hand, if you have some developed mindfulness and clear comprehension, where you can precisely recognize the desire, precisely recognize whatever the defilement, so that proper understanding of that defilement is also important. So that is why Buddha mentioned panyaya diswa diswa pahatabba rago bhikkave, or rather lobho bhikkave na kayena pahatabbo na vachaya panyaya diswa diswa pahatabba doso bhikkave na kayena pahatabbo na vachaya panyaya diswa diswa pahatabba. So likewise, series of defilements he mentioned in Kaya Sutta, where he mentioned that none of these desires can be eliminated merely by the bodily activity, merely by the verbal activity. But you need wisdom to overcome them. You need to recognize them, desire as desire, lust as lust, anger as anger, jealousy as jealousy. So likewise, you have to clearly recognize them. And after that, you have to disengage from it. You have to look at it objectively. And then it loses its power, because we are the ones strengthening. So these desires themselves don't have much power. We are pumping enough power to that. So we are the ones enlivening them. So we are the ones enriching them. So we stop this supply of fuel from our side. We become disengaged from them. We now step back. And now we are looking at it. Oh, this is lust. This is anger. This is jealousy. So we are now objectively looking at them. So as a result of that, what happened? Now these defilements loosen their strength and they start to fade away. So this is the approach that Buddha mentioned. And there are various other aspects like, say, you are maintaining some sense restraint and you are avoiding sort of bad places. You are not going to those bad places, or you are not associating bad people, and you are strengthening your mindfulness, concentration, wisdom, or enlightenment factors. So likewise, many approaches are there. I mean, many ways you have to address this issue. But in short, what Buddha mentioned is that you have to first recognize this desire. And rather than implementing it, gratifying it, you have to step back and watch it and let it go. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 6. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, how does karma tanha differ from karma chanda? If chanda is like voting or I like, then what is the key characteristic of Tanna? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, so chanda sometimes used both ways. I mean, can be used in the positive aspect as well as in the negative aspect. So you can have a wholesome chanda, kusala chanda, sometimes we call as. Suppose that you want to help someone. So that is also a desire. It's a kusala chanda. It's a wholesome desire. And that is appreciated. It is not that you have to overcome. Rather, you recognize that the desire as a wholesome desire and you can implement it. And you recognize it is beneficial to yourself and it is beneficial to another person. And you are implementing it. That is one aspect. So that is also called as chanda. But on the other hand, the opposite is the kama chanda. So where you have desire to these sensual pleasures, sense objects. So there the agitation happen. And tanha typically is directly talking about this, the unwholesome side, where you have kama tanha for the sense, so you have the sensual desire, as well as the bhava tanha, desire to become, and vibhava tanha, desire to get rid of. Now, even though we are talking like this, you can't immediately get rid of tanha. So actually Buddha talks about how to use tanha in order to get rid of tanha. It's a kind of a riddle in a way. How to use tanha in order to overcome tanha. There is one interesting story. One time, one nun, Bhikkhuni, want to see Venerable Ananda. Because Venerable Ananda is a beautiful monk, quite appreciated by many. So this nun have a good, you know, some sort of an idea about Venerable Ananda. So she got, you know, kind of a sickness to see Venerable Ananda. So she is sending a messenger to Venerable Ananda telling that I am so sick and I can't come out of the monastery. So please come and help me. Now she is sending a message. Now Venerable Ananda, probably he may know that it is kind of a different type of sickness. So anyway, Venerable Ananda is coming. And now once he arrived, and then he understood now this nun is not really sick, but he has some mental issue. Now he is, having some problem with myself. So there he delivers a very beautiful Dhamma sermon. So tanhang nissaya tanha pahatapu. So that is the point that I want to highlight. So one is using craving in order to overcome craving. So at the beginning of the practice, you have to have some sort of a motivation, some sort of a desire to become someone. Say you are having kind of a determination, motivation. I want to become a sotapanna. I want to get rid of samsara. I want to get rid of lust. I want to get rid of desire. I want to get rid of anger. So all these are kind of motivation in a way, sort of determinations, motivations. And you are driven by these motivations. It's a kind of a craving. It is true. And these motivations are quite necessary at the beginning because otherwise you are not putting enough energy to the practice. So assume that people are talking that the hell is quite dangerous and all the problems are there. And therefore you need to somehow become a sotapan. So people are now desire to become a sotapanna, and you have that motivation. You want to become a sotapanna. So you want to become. So that is also a becoming, desire to become. And now you are practicing diligently. And as a result of the practice, so you are in a later part of the practice, so you are addressing this very desire as well. So you recognize this desire. I want to become. So you are creating a self. You are sort of, it is also generating some amount of agitation. So likewise, in order to recognize that sort of subtle aspects of the desire, so you need a fair amount of mindfulness and clear comprehension. So therefore, don't think that you have to immediately get rid of desire and then you are not practicing enough. You are not putting enough attention or effort to the practice. But as you are continuing with the practice, so the practice itself will show you different levels of desires, different types of desires. And likewise, one has to purify oneself. So that is why Venerable Ananda mentioned there, tanhaṁ nissāya tanhā pahātabbu. You are using craving in order to overcome craving. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 8. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, would you please be able to explain what it means by virapta chitta, much appreciation and merits with metta? That's the end of the question.
Virapta chitta.
Yeah.
Where is it? I don't know where it is mentioned. Virapta chitta. If the person can, refer the place or the verse where it is mentioned, that would be easy to give a better answer, connected with the context. So, Viratta Chitta Ayatike Bhavasmi. Probably, I don't know whether you are referring this. It is available in the Ratana Sutta. Tekina Bija Avirul Hichanda Nibbanti Dhira Yathayam Padipo. I don't know whether I need to find out the proper place, verse, then it is easy to answer. We'll go to the other question, Chatu, till I find it out.
I think the person said yes. The reference you just made, I believe that's it.
Atana Sutta?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, by the way, we'll go to the other one till we...
Okay, that's fine. Yeah. Question number 4 of 8, general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, last time you mentioned about the advantages of observing elemental characteristics while walking. My practice is progressing well thanks to your kind guidance, and I feel relaxed and composed after every sitting and walking. During walking, I come to a state where the observations and sensations are blurred and I'm in a state of walking automatically after 15 to 20 minutes. Mind distractions are not a major obstacle as I have multiple examples of how it comes back to the walking process after my distraction, so I'm confident about the power of mindfulness. After last week's advice from you on elemental characteristics, I realized that the blurred observations I have during walking are actually hardness, softness, some patches of hot and cold nature, and flowing like nature of the leg movements, etc. Earlier, I used to observe them not knowing, and now I seem to be trying to distinguish these elemental observations. Is this the right practice? If necessary, I can take my focus away from paying attention to these elemental characteristics and trying to identify and note them. With metta, that's the end.
So basically, you are asking... So actually, I couldn't focus much while I was thinking, finding that Virata Chitta. I found it. Let me answer that first then. So that is available in Ratana Sutta. So Kinang Puranang Navang Natti Sambhavang Viratta Chitta Ayatike Bhavasmin. So that is the last verse, main last verse in the Ratana Sutta. Kinang Puranang. So the previous karma has all uprooted, gone, finished. Navang natti sambhavang, and new karma is not generated. Viratchittayatike bhavasmi. Now, with when how he is maintaining his faculties, eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mind, those faculties, now he is maintaining without making any desires. Now, typically, as we discussed today, by looking through eyes, we generate certain desires. By hearing through our ears various sounds, we generate desires. So this is the typical way how we live. But here, viratta citta ayatike bhavasmi. So he is continuing his life without making the mind agitated, without making the mind sort of lustful, and kind of, as we discuss, kind of keeping the mind unagitated in a way, not subjected to any kind of desire. And there is no desires improving or increasing, because now all the lust, hatred, delusion are gone, finished, uprooted. As a result of that, the mind is unagitated. Okay, can you repeat the second question, Chaku?
Do you want me to give a summary or the full thing?
Last one. Just now you finished?
Yeah. Okay. Question number four. Dear Venerable Bhante, last time you mentioned about the advantages of observing elemental characteristics while walking. My practice is progressing well thanks to your kind guidance, and I feel relaxed and composed after every sitting and walking. During walking, I come to a state where the observations and sensations are blurred, and I'm in a state of walking automatically after 15 to 20 minutes. Mind distractions are not a major obstacle, as I have multiple examples of how it comes back to the walking process after any distraction, so I'm confident about the power of mindfulness. After last week's advice from you on elemental characteristics, I realized that the blurred observations I have during walking are actually hardness, softness, some patches of hot and cold nature, and flowing like nature of the leg movements, etc. Earlier, I used to observe them not knowing, and now I seem to be trying to distinguish these elemental observations. Is this the right practice? If necessary, I can take my focus away from paying attention to these elemental characteristics and trying to identify and note them. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, so basically, if you are able to recognize these different elemental characteristics, you got to continue. So it may naturally evolve to the other states. So rather than trying to deliberately change anything, so it's a matter of recognizing various element characteristics, and it will naturally evolve to the other level. So it has that nature. I mean, it is not that we are manipulating our meditation, our practice. Rather, we continue daily practice, and as a result of that, it evolves to the other level. So again, now we are practicing and it evolves to the other level. So if you are at the moment capable of recognizing various characteristics of the elements, so you just to continue that. More and more you are recognizing different characteristics of these elements, and it may slowly evolve to the next step. Yeah.
Question number 5 of 8. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, was the Pacheka Buddha mentioned in the Deshana living in a mountain called Isigiri? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, there are many places mentioned. So Isigiri is one place mentioned in the Isigiri Sutta, that another sutta available where Buddha is giving an account of many Pacheka Buddha's names, and most of them are residing at Isigiri Pabbata. But here I can't remember this, whether this Pacheka Buddha is there. Need to check. Because many Pacheka Buddhas, it is not the only Isigiri Pabbata, is mountain Isigiri, but there are many other places also they have lived. Yes.
We'll go to the next question, Bhante.
Yeah.
Question number 6 of 8, general question. Dear Bhante, today's Dhamma sermon and the verse, Samkapparago Purisa Kammo. Afterwards, it says, let the sensual object stay as is. Does this mean there is no sensual objects outside, but everything is in the desire in the mind, or we put it to the mind works merely because we cannot control outside? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, if we go back to the today's verse, so it says, they are not sensual pressure, pretty things in the world. A person's sensual pressure is the lustful intention. The pretty things remain just as they are in the world, but the wise remove the desire for them. Now, basically, one doesn't have to control the outside sense objects. Suppose that if you are complaining that these beautiful things are the ones agitating my mind, these beautiful sounds are the ones agitating my mind. So that kind of a complaint is not reasonable. So that is, on the other hand, we can understand. But rather than complaining like that, you are restraining the mind. You are controlling the mind, or you are leaving the desire, and you are being mindful about various desires arising in the mind, and you are uprooting the desire. So once that is satisfied, once that is fulfilled, then the outside beautiful things may not agitate the mind. So that is the beauty here. Now, it is not that you are trying to control the outside.
We might have just lost Bhante there.
Sorry?
You just cut out for a second there, Bhante.
Oh, can you hear now?
Yeah.
So what I want to tell is that, the outside components, beautiful sounds, beautiful sights, smells, etc. So they remain as it is, but you have controlled the mind, you have developed the mind and uprooted the desire. So that is what mentioned here. The pretty things remain as it is. So you are not angry with them. You are not complaining about these outside things, telling that they are the ones agitating the mind. Rather, you recognize the desires triggering in the mind, and you be mindful about them and recognizing them and letting them go. And when one is doing this for a long time, then there's a possibility of overcoming desires. Now, the outside components, outside objects may not agitate the mind. So that is why, now, when Buddha and the other Arahants are living, so they may have seen various beautiful things. So those various beautiful things didn't agitate their mind. So the beautiful things are not the issue. The issue is in the mind. Yeah, we have desire for these beautiful things. So these desires are the ones causing agitation. Yeah.
Question number 7 of 8. I think it's actually exactly the same question, but I'll just read it out anyway. Bhante, can you explain the second verse of Nibbidhika Sutta verse again, please? Does that mean that there is nothing wrong with the lustful and sensual word inherently in absolute terms and leave it as is?
Nothing wrong in the outside sensual objects. So that is what we need to clearly understand. So if one is complaining that this particular object is agitating my mind, that particular object is agitating my mind, so that is not a reasonable complaint. So you are always finding fault outside. So that is not a reasonable complaint. Rather than looking at through that angle, you are looking at yourself. Because now say there is a beautiful flower. So if you are too much attracted to it, you are too much looking at it, probably your mind also get agitated. But to another person, it may not agitate his mind. So if the problem lies on the outside object, so the same effect should happen to both people. But one may remain calm, but the other's mind only get agitated. So that shows us the problem is with that particular person's mind, not with that beautiful flower. So the flower remains as it is, but one has to correct one's mind. One has to overcome various desires, which is the one causing the agitation in the mind. So that is what this verse highlighting. So when you are observing something and looking at something, and you are sort of taking some imprint of it, and if you are thinking about it again and again, and it ultimately leads to agitation. And even when you are looking at it, you get agitation. Even it is not there, if you have some mental image of it, thinking about it again and again, it causes agitation. So both these actually we have to overcome. So we are not, in other terms, we are not promoting mental proliferation, which is the actually causing a lot of agitation. Rather, we are avoiding this mental proliferation, calming down mental proliferation. And as a result of that, now, even though you look at it, mind is silent. So that is the advice given by the Buddha to Bahir. Ditte dittamattam bhavissati, sute sutamattam bhavissati, mute mutamattam bhavissati, vinyate vinyatamattam bhavissati. Once you see something, you stop there. Don't go for thinking. Don't go for mental proliferation. Once you hear something, you just stop there. Don't go for mental proliferation. So that is the, that, that mean, that has to be achieved through one's practice. Yeah.
Question number 8. This is the last one. General question. Dear Bande, if we see how thoughts arise and create agitation in the mind, and not getting carried away by the thoughts and see the underlying desire, can we say that we are seeing the Samudaya Satya? That's the end of the question.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that also we can accept, because now mind is not much agitated, but you feel that sort of a tendency is there. There is a little lust generating, or kind of a desires are somewhat latent. Can't say latent, if you are noticed, that means they have come to the surface. But you are able to maintain the equilibrium. So you haven't lost your balance. So that is somehow you are maintaining the balance. So you are in a better position than the previous stage. Say, for example, previously, so you have seen something, it has, the desires has arisen. You can't stop, your mind get agitated. But you have seen the desire. But you are, as you are continuing your practice, now another level. So you have seen something, and as a result of that, there are certain desires arising, but mind is not agitated, because you are able to notice those desires at their very early stages. But later, as a result of this practice, so there may not be available even this undercurrent desires. So your mind may remain calm, free from desires, free from any agitation, and you may be able to maintain the purity of mind, because the mind has recognized the value of inner silence, so value of purity, the value of kind of a free mind, clean mind. So, I mean, things may happen naturally, or rather gradually. So we can't immediately have these states. So even though I am talking to you, I can't say that my mind is always free from any agitation. So we have to give time. We have to continue our practice. So slowly, so we may have to experience less agitation, even with some, say, considerable impulses. Now, say, for example, when you see something sort of neutral, your mind may not get agitated. But when you see something disturbing, probably your mind get agitated. So likewise, we have to enhance ourselves. So it may not happen overnight. It may take time. So it is mentioned by the Buddha. So as one is continuing one's practice, so you are able to maintain this unagitated mind, calm mind, equipoise, equilibrium of the mind, say this middle range, quite easily. And that is representing some practice, some strength or stability of the mind. Yeah.
That was the last question, but then we're out of time anyway. So I'd like to wind up. Firstly, I'd like to thank Bhante and also pass on our merits for helping us with this session, and also to the people and those seen and unseen behind the scenes working to promote and help this session go ahead. And also, lastly, to the participants, because without you, there would be no program. With that, I'd like to end the session. Theruvan Sannai.
Yeah, Theruvan Sannai.